Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. West Coast Special, Part 1 of 2. Ken Johnson, 32 years of combination experience, Fire Chief of Lodi Fire Department in California. Before becoming Chief of Lodi, Ken got his start with the Stockton Fire Department, where he served for 23 years. During that time, Ken promoted through the ranks, going all the way from firefighter to Division Chief of Training and finally Fire Marshal. The experiences Ken had coming up is second to none, which truly, in my opinion, has shaped the way his mindset is when it comes to the job that can resonate with most firefighters. Along the interview, Ken dropped so many gems and nuggets that I truly hope the listeners can catch on to. One of my favorite quotes from Ken is this: "I think when you look at making your career path the path of the fireman, you have to do a lot of self-introspection and say, do I have courage? Do I have courage to do things that are hard when they matter?" With that, I present Mr. Ken Johnson.
Well, good morning. My name is Ken Johnson. I'm the Lodi Fire Chief. Been with this organization since 2021. And prior to that, I was with the Stockton Fire Department since 1998. Just a little bit about me, how I got into the fire service. You know, it goes back to being a kid. I grew up in a generation of superheroes and a dad that was in the military, and, you know, I wanted to matter. And I think early on, you know, looking to those career paths where they make a difference, there's obviously the military, the police department, fire department. I really honed in on the fire department. And I blame my mom for taking me to the grocery store. You know, growing up in Southern California, right next to our grocery store was Fire Station 74, LA Fire Department. And I'd watch these just, you know, amazing people show up to work and ride the engine or ride the truck. And it was a dual house engine truck company. And I just fell in love with what they did. You know, you'd see them go for calls for service and come screaming out of the firehouse. And I wanted to be that. And so since my earliest thoughts, all I've ever wanted to be was a fireman. And so in high school, I started volunteering with the Glendale Fire Department as an explorer, just learning the craft, learning from some great guys. A man by the name of Ed Ackerman just took me under his wing and showed me the pathway of how to get into the fire service. And so obviously keeping a clean record and you know, graduating high school, not having things you know, that would get in your way, being an athlete. I went to a local community college and studied my associate's degree in fire science, got my EMT, started working on an ambulance. And although I valued the work, I knew I didn't want to work on an ambulance forever. And, you know, tried to get enough experience to get me into paramedic school. And so applied for paramedic school. I was in that process of getting that credential when I was hired with the Stockton Fire Department. And came there in 1998, and it just was a great opportunity to learn on the job how to be a firefighter.
And that is one heck of a department to get your feet wet, for sure.
Yeah, I didn't, like I was mentioning earlier, I did not know what I had gotten initially. I did not know a lot about Stockton. This is, you know, really prior to much on the internet, and you really had to go travel to a town to see it and see what it was about. And, you know, it's not a large city. It's not a small city. You know, at the time it was 12 fire stations with three trucks, four O staffed on the engine, 5 O staffed on most of the trucks at that time. They're not now, but, you know, it was just an amazing city to work for. And, you know, when you know, are an island city where you don't have a lot of other large cities around you, you have to handle all your own business. You know, whatever comes in, whatever's thrown your way, you've got 12 engines on duty that day. Figure it out. And it became a almost like a rocket ship of learning, you know, where it all gets thrown at you really quick. But honestly, I feel very blessed to have had my career start there.
With that being said, Chief, can you tell us what your first day was like? Before that, I'm assuming they had an academy back then. Maybe you had to get used to the way they do things.
Right. So back in the day, They ran a very abbreviated academy. It was more of more an orientation than really learning the skills of firefighting. You learn the tools, you learn the basic hose pulls, water supply issues, but most of your training was on the job training when you were on probation. Because they had 4-0 staffing, you were the fourth guy on the engine. But we ran an 8-week academy, very comprehensive, and then they rolled you out onto the line. And how the tradition was back then was when you graduated the academy, if your shift was working, you left the academy that afternoon and went right to your firehouse that you were working at. And, they sent me to Engine 9. Engine 9 at that time was the seventh busiest fire engine in the nation. It at that time was running about 5,000 calls a year. And you knew you were going to get work because it sat right in the middle of town, just north of the downtown district. And there's some mid-rise, high-rise, some turn of the century buildings, a lot of Victorians. And so that very first night I show up for work and we get to we had what we call dispatches, were like brush trucks for grass fires. We jumped in the truck and the guys jumped in the engine and we drove out to do some training over on the east side of town, some just four-wheel drive training to make sure I could drive the vehicle when a structure fire came in. It was in our first due, and so I'm driving in this truck, following the fire engine that's screaming to this call. It's in the middle of our district, and we end up getting beat by engine 2, which was the downtown engine. We were a little bit out of position, and I can remember like this is happening. Like this shock value of my very first day, this is what I get thrown into, and I'm wearing my brush coat and my brush pants because we're doing training, and I see my crew, the captain, and the senior firefighter, just take off towards the fire, and I'm partnered up with the engineer, and so I'm throwing my turnouts on over the top of my yellows because I don't want to take any time to take this stuff off. And my driver at the time, he grabs me, says, "We're going to go help with the truck on the roof." I'm thinking, "All right, this got real." And it was a two-story Victorian, there's a 35 thrown to it, and we go climbing up this ladder, and we get to the roof, and the truck had made their way back towards the ladder. And at that time, they're wearing a helmet and a coat, and they've got the saw. They don't even have an SCBA or anything else on. And the smoke had laid down so heavy across the rooftop that they couldn't make where they wanted to cut the hole. So this guy who I've never met hands me the chainsaw and says, "We need to cut it over there." And so we make our way across the roof and we cut this big heat hole, and nothing but fire shoots out of this thing. And we back up, we start cutting another heat hole, and we hear air horns. Nobody told me what air horns means. And my driver's like, "We got to get off the roof." And now I think, "Oh, great. This is going sideways." And we get to the ladder and he's trying to tell me to get down the ladder. And I'm thinking he's testing my bravery. And I'm like, "No, sir, you go first." And he's like, "Get down the ladder." And so I grab the ladder. I've got the chainsaw through my coat arm, and I do a ladder slide down the ladder. And he climbs down the ladder and he looks me in my face and he says, "Who taught you how to do that?" And now I'm spinning. I'm like, "I have no idea. Somewhere they taught me. You told me to get off the roof. I got off the roof." And he looks at me, he says, "That was awesome." So that was kind of my first experience with firefighting. And just when we were making our way back to the front of the building, we had a mayday come in, and we had a firefighter that was missing in the building. There was a partial collapse in part of the Victorian, and we activated the RIT, went in and got them. And that was my day one. And I have a picture of it, at my house, and it's me looking like a little kid standing in turnout coats in front of the street with nothing but smiles on my face, like, "Wow, this is the job." And now that was my first day on the job. We did have a bet in my academy to see who would get the first multiple alarm fire, and I was the one. Like, I was too cheap. I'm like, "I'm not going to bet on that. I don't want to waste money on that." I would have won, but I didn't bet, so here we are.
That is one hell of a first shift for sure. For sure. Chief, can you? Everybody, well, most people know about Stockton now because of social media technology, the way we communicate. But has Stockton always been busy and aggressive as they were back when you started?
Yeah, I would say Stockton has always had a reputation for being an aggressive fire department. And by being aggressive, I mean, with every effort, getting after a fire with the tools and resources that you have on scene and placing life as the priority over everything. And, it is an aggressive fire department with limited resources. In the Central Valley, it's not surrounded by a big metropolitan area. It had 12 engine companies, 3 truck companies. You're talking, approximately 50 people on duty at any given day. and you're responding to somewhere in the ballpark of 130 to 200 calls a day, depending on the day. Primarily, EMS is a lot of what drives the departments, an ALS fire department, so paramedic non-transport services were a part of it. But honestly, I would say that Stockton is known for, being extremely professional at whatever it does, whether it's, fire suppression, it being, an ALS paramedic program, from, the heavy rescue, technical rescue side of things, the water rescue, one of the rare departments that has a surface rescue water team and a dive team at that time. I think diving operations in the fire department are probably one of the most dangerous things you can do, particularly in our waterways, all the way to a TEMS team, a tactical medics team, and whatever lane it chose to get into. I think because of the culture, those folks who did those disciplines became the subject matter experts and would be known for that.
Okay, with that being said, before we get to how you became the fire chief for Lodi, which is a neighboring department of Stockton, at what point, actually, I'm going to kind of go back with the question where, sorry, so you already told us how your first shift was. So after that, from that point on, the company that you were assigned to, did you try to find firefighters you wanted to emulate, like positive firefighters who were into the job?
So interesting enough, Stockton hadn't hired for a while, and I was part of this, three or four groups that were replacing a bunch of folks getting ready to retire. And so, I could walk into a firehouse and be 20 years younger than the next closest guy in my age. And I found at the time I really wanted to establish myself and my reputation as being trustworthy, hardworking, and, to be honest, to be brave. And you're on probation, you moved around. And so I did a tour on Engine 9, which was downtown, a tour on Engine 4, which was kind of uptown, and then a tour on Engine 7. And you're kind of like being recruited to some degree by the senior captains, because these senior captains were looking for some hard charging hoseman that could, handle the hose line for them and get the work done, but also be good around the firehouse, could make a good meal and was good at keeping up the firehouse and the apparatus. And while I was on probation, I was actually selected to be a senior guy on Engine 4, which was not really common back then for a junior guy to be selected as what they called the two man, the senior hoseman. But I was chosen by a man named Randy Rooker, who was probably one of my best mentors I've ever had, almost like a father-son kind of relationship, where he would literally, during structure fires, be right behind me, coaching me through what to do. There are even times he'd slow me down and say, "Watch this for a minute. Watch what's going to happen. When we do, door control, or when they vent, or really understanding the craft of firefighting." And so I found myself more wanting to work under people who had a good knowledge of the job, both leadership, pumping the engine, to aerial operations, rescue operations. And just honestly, for the first 3 years, they probably never heard my voice much, because I was just really trying to take it all in.
And that's, I mean, I think when you have the equivalent of a department that goes and sees that kind of work to gain that experience as a new person, and you're humble enough where you just want to watch and absorb as much information as you can, I think it's such a success.
Right. My dad taught me early on to be slow to speak and quick to listen, because you never know who you're sitting next to. And when I looked at my career early on, just the first couple of years, and the experience that I felt that I was receiving, and I'm looking at these guys who've been there for 30 years, and you multiply out how much more they must know. They've gone on the same calls I've gone on. They've had the same experiences, and they look salty as all get out. And I'd rather, keep my mouth shut and be thought of as an idiot, versus opening my mouth and remove their doubt that I was an idiot. And so I'd gladly sit and listen to them.
With that being said, when did you decide, and how long was it before you decided to start moving up through the ranks?
So I had transitioned from working with Randy Rooker to the union president, whose name was Dave Macedo, and he was the downtown engine. I thought I was the man. I'm working for the union president on the downtown rig, and it was honestly a highlight of my career. And we were having a heart to heart about, the captain's promotions. And I always knew I wanted to be a company officer. I love team sports. I particularly love basketball. I love coaching it. I love, leading the team. And I knew that would translate well, in the fire service. I didn't necessarily have a timeline. In my head, there's always the 10 years as a firefighter, 10 years as a driver, 10 years as a captain, and then call it a day. That didn't work out for me that way at all. But when I was talking to Captain Macedo about being a company officer, he made it very clear that if you want to be a captain, you need to be an engineer. You need to drive, for a period of time. You need to learn to pump. You need to learn to throw the aerial and the nuances with that. Because if you're managing a driver, you should be able to help troubleshoot issues. Simple things like you can hear the engine transition from road to pump and not have to ask. You can hear it. There's a difference in the sound of the transmission and the different sound of the motor. Those little nuances that you pick up when you drive versus never having done it. And so that probably pushed me to promote quicker than I would have. I would have stayed a firefighter longer, but I knew that that was not in my wheelhouse. I had driven, large pieces of equipment before, but I had never studied hydraulics like that. I can make my way around my own car, but I wasn't a diesel mechanic. And so I took some driver operator courses. I took some hydraulic courses at the local community college to prepare for the test because the tests were competitive. And I ended up promoting the first time I took the engineer's exam. And man, they don't tell you when you're like getting into the fire service how much fun it is to drive. The most fun job I've had in the fire department is driving a fire engine. I mean, they give you the wheel of the engine. They say, drive this thing like you stole it. And the first, there is no greater job in the fire ground than the first 5 minutes on scene first due as a fire engineer. I mean, you have so much work to do. And if you're good, you set your guys up for success like you cannot believe. And even little things like, where I did a lot of my time in Stockton, it was on engine four. And we had, it was an engine, a truck, and a battalion chief house. And I took great pride in knowing my district well. Like, I'm not going to go to the map. That's not what you do. It's in my head. And we get out of the firehouse and, on structure fires, we sat just north of a big community college, Delta College. So it's a very busy area, a high population area. And, you'd come out on a structure fire and you'd have the truck behind you and the battalion chief behind you and just people looking at, where are these guys going and what are they about to do? And just the responsibility that you held and being the guy who's in the front of the line and we're going to take, this group of heroes to a scene of chaos and do great. That was probably some of the best moments of my life. But I'll tell you, once I felt confident and comfortable driving, which only took a couple of years for me, I really was ready to become a company officer. Like I felt, I was 20, almost 27 when I promoted to captain in Stockton. And I was young, I looked young, but I wasn't young in my head because I had studied under these great guys who just pounded into me, just the discipline of being a fireman. And, I think you can live vicariously through people's experiences if you're honest with yourself and you put yourself in their position and you take on that next level. I never was a flip-flop person. As a firefighter, I tried to act like a captain, as far as decision making and responsibility and even how I communicated. And that just translated all the way, well, honestly, probably all the way through my career. I love this job too much not to show it all the respect I possibly can. And so I think I probably promoted a lot faster than I had wanted to initially. I just feel like it was in me. I would have had to cap myself, and not let out what I knew was already growing in me. But I did spend 10 years, just about 10 years as a captain, loved every minute of it. I took over a program called the Auxiliary Program, which is our volunteers. And so, we had weekly trainings with them. It's almost like managing a small fire department within a fire department. And with that, the firehouse was always busy. And as a captain, I had complete control of the day. And so we can make it where, we're going to be as productive as we possibly can be. And what I found is it made like people who were excited about the fire service wanted to work with me. And I could hand off things to them and take on new responsibilities. And next thing you know, we've accomplished some amazing things in the fire department. We actually on our own made the whole back of the firehouse like a North training division. We had props built and we brought in a classroom and a fitness room, all on CalJack dollars, which is state funding from our state fire marshal, or our own time and dime. And made it where in Stockton there's a North Battalion South Battalion rivalry, right? And the South Battalion's the older, some socioeconomically depressed areas, and obviously they get more numbers of fires. And the North Battalion has some larger buildings, larger sometimes larger fires. And we didn't have a training division on the north side, and so we'll build our own, and we'll keep that fire service rivalry going back and forth. But that towards the end of me being a captain, Stockton had gone through a bankruptcy as a city, and that was terrible. I do not recommend it for any city. And we ended up, really laying off about a third of the fire department, and we went from 4-0 staff in the engine to 3-0 staff. We went from 5-0 staff on the trucks to 4-0 staff. We shut down a truck company. We shut down an engine company. Devastating. I had to lay off my junior hoseman, and we did our best to get them placed in neighboring fire departments. But that's like leaving family. And the other issue was fires didn't slow down, and the call volume didn't slow down. And now we're doing more with less, which became very problematic. And going through the bankruptcy, there were some other transitions that the city had to make. And at that point in my personal life, we took financial cuts, as employees. We the our labor group did everything they could to include major pay cuts for everyone in order to retain all of our members, and the math still didn't work. And in my personal life, I'm married, I have three children, and I have bills to pay. And it got to a point where I can't rely on overtime to pay my bills. I'm most likely going to have to take the next step and be promote to a battalion chief. And a lot of soul searching, a lot of time spent with my wife. Like, I don't know if I want to take that jump. To give up the engine is tough. I mean, I was working my favorite engine with my favorite guys, and I was comfortable. Like, I go to work, I wasn't stressed about anything. It was just like being at home. And I decided for my family it's something that I need to do, and I took the battalion chief's test reluctantly, because I knew that my fire administration was watching me because of the work I was doing in the auxiliary program. And I think they saw me as a likely, fire admin candidate, which I did not want to do. I had never worked Monday through Friday a day in my life up until that point, and I didn't see myself ever wanting to sit behind a desk. And we're looking at, an outside fire chief had come into the city, somebody who wasn't, raised through Stockton. And, I think there were some concerns about the future of the fire department, where it was going. So when I promoted to battalion chief, I had been approached by my union, and I had been approached by the operations chief to really consider, applying for the division chief of training. And I'm like, are you guys high? I just became a battalion chief. I was 37 at the time. Like, there's guys who have way more experience than me. And they were adamant that they wanted me to take this on. And so the day of the interviews, I actually was ordered. So you'll like this story. I was ordered to take the division chief test. And it was an assessment center at City Hall. And so, we're all told we had to have a resume. I typed up my resume on a Word document about an hour before my interview. And I show up to the interview, and other folks have PowerPoint presentations and all their things. And I have a sheet of paper with my, basically telling what I did for Stockton Fire Department. That's really all I had. And I go through the assessment, and there was outside people on the panel, and I didn't want to look dumb. And so when they asked me questions, I answered them honestly, and a lot of deployment questions, a lot of like thoughts on training and thoughts on where the fire service needs to be in the community. And halfway through the interview, a structure fire came in the 1st Battalion, and I left because I was the working battalion chief that day. And I arrive on scene, and the battalion one had actually sent me into an interior division. So I suit up, we go inside, not much of a fire, and we get it out relatively quickly. But when I go, leave the fire, I go back to the interview, and I'm in my bunker pants and a t-shirt. I wasn't going to go back to the firehouse and get cleaned up to finish this interview. And I come walking in, and these outside assessors are looking at me like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I came to finish the interview." Like, "Well, do you want to go get cleaned up?" And I'm like, "No, I don't want to drive all the way north again to come back. Just let's finish the interview questions and we'll, call it a day." Apparently that hit really well with them. I wasn't trying to, honestly. I was over the interview,
Right.
and they recommended that I be the chief of training, which, talk about drinking from a fire hydrant. The training gig, yeah, absolutely. I've got that. But they also wanted me to rebuild the fire academy. And I was adamant that we're not going to have this 8-week academy that I went through. I want firefighters to be confident when they hit the line. They're just like my situation. Their career fire could be day one, and I want them ready to operate. And so we pushed it out to a 22-week academy, kind of mirroring Sac City, LA City, Fresno. We visited a lot of academies to build that out, and that was a huge lift. But the other thing they gave me was EMS and the communication center and investigations. And then I'm like, I'm one guy. Like, how can we do all this, be in all these places? We have a 911 dispatch center that basically covers all the 911 fire and EMS calls for San Joaquin County, processes about just shy of 100,000 calls every single year. So that in itself could be its own chief and staff and all that. But I chose, I'm going to focus in on, one discipline at a time. We'll start with the fire academy because that's the most immediate need. And in order to do this right, I need to surround myself with talented people. And so I brought in, Brandon Doolin and Eric Patton to be this academy cadre, to really dig into the details and create a training site, to create a training plan, to take what's good with neighboring departments and build that into our plan, but also build in Stockton specific things. That was the first goal. We also recognized that the three of us are not the best at everything. And so we sent a whole cadre of Stockton firefighters through the state's training curriculum to become certified instructors because we wanted to have an accredited academy. And so, gosh, I'm going to tell you, better part of 30 of our of the members there, whether they be good at forcible entry or auto extrication or ladders or nozzle work or whatever it might be, we sent them through school so they could be certified instructors. So that when we had those blocks or modules in the academy, we pull them in and you teach ladders. Javier Ricci, you're great at this, or Pat McKeegan, you're the forcible entry king, or Toby Trana with truck work. We have people who we know are so passionate about something. Let the best teach that. And my marching orders when I was given the division chief roles was to clean up fire ground operations, make their consistency in all three shifts, to clean up communications, and then more from the line. I'm hearing it used to be forcible entry was a circ saw or a chainsaw to the front door. We're like, well, we have conventional tools that work just as well. Literally took the FDNY's forcible entry manual and said, let's take this and just land it right here in Stockton, and it really took hold. And now, what you see of Stockton, the goal was that whenever you see a Stockton firefighter operating, it doesn't matter who, what the name is on the back of their jacket or what shift it was on, we look the same. Like, we address the fire problem the same. And I think the initial, measurement, a tool we used was, we want to get water to the fire within a minute of the air brakes hitting. And you look at it time and time again, parking the rig, making the stretch, masking up, forcing the door, almost like clockwork. It's before the 60-second mark. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, what got me to the division chief role. I did a small time as the fire marshal. It was an ask of the fire chief at the time that I take over that division for a period of time. Total learning curve. It's a it's a it's a dis if you were choosing to be a fire chief at some point in your career, you have to spend time in fire prevention because it is such a need. When fire prevention works, you never know it because the fire doesn't happen. It's not necessarily the sexy part of the fire department, but it is, fire prevention, with public education and outreach and fire investigation. It is definitely, in the family of the fire service, and you should know how to do it. And I did that for, better part of two and a half years, when an opportunity came to come to Lodi as the fire chief, in 2021. And Lodi was the town that I raised my family in. My parents live here. My brother lives here. My friends are here. We go to church here. We're very well connected in this community, and it's much smaller, than the city of Stockton, about the 10th the size. We're in Lodi. We respond to just shy of 8,000 calls a year. We have four companies and a truck. But what I saw here was an opportunity to, end my career working just as hard as I did entering into my career. I'm not a guy who likes to sit still. I actually could get depressed if I don't accomplish things throughout the day. And I saw that Lodi, one thing that particularly bothered me about this fire department was it was a BLS fire department, non-transport. And because we sit just north of Stockton, our transport provider oftentimes has delays getting to our town. And we have people who are not getting advanced life support. And, I've told this story before. I was at work one day years ago, and my working on engine 3 down the southern part of Stockton, and I was working overtime as a hoseman, and I was a captain at the time. Like, this is great. I don't have to do reports. I can just jump on the back of the rig and do what needs to be done. And we ended up getting this house fire, and during the investigation and looking through some of the soot, I got some just junk in my eyes and didn't think much of it. And went over to the engine, dropped the tank, splashed some water in my eyes to get this soot out of my eyes, and didn't think much of it. Next day, I'm at work. I'm working a 72 because the overtime shift was my first day on, and I worked my regular 48 after that. I'm noticing my eyes just don't feel right. I feel like kind of crusty, or just pain. And get through that shift, and that night it gets to a point where I have to like wipe crap out of my eyes. Something's wrong. I got some infection in my eye. And so the next morning, I go to my battalion chief, tell him I'm going to go down to the fire department doctor and just get some medicine for my eyes while I'm on shift. And so I go down to my doc, and he's like, "Hey, you have pink eye, conjunctivitis, and you're highly infectious, and you have to go home." I'm like, "I don't have to go home. You're going to give me these drops in my eyes. I'll be just fine in a couple hours. And it's a work comp. You got to go home." And I'm like, "I don't want to go home." And I'm reluctant to go home because if I were to have gone home, I wouldn't have gotten credit for my overtime, my halftime on the shift before. And I'm like, I don't want to give that up. And so I don't tell my battalion chief. I go back to work. He goes through my paperwork and he's looking at it, he says, "Hey, you're released from duty. You got to go home." Now I'm stuck. I got to follow his order, and I'm upset. And so I drive home, and my wife's there, and she surprised to see me. She says she's going to go pick up my 4-year-old from preschool, and she'll be right back. Well, I'm just kind of racked out in my man cave, and she comes back, and a few minutes later, my 4-year-old comes and gets me, and says, "Mom's on the floor." I'm like, "Mom's on the floor." So I walk around to the kitchen, and my wife is laying on the floor, and she's kind of conscious. And so I pick her up, I put her on the couch, I try to get her some orange juice. She was pregnant at the time, so I thought maybe she has low blood sugar, and wasn't that. And go to get a blood pressure, and I pump it up to 120. She's not very big. And I let the needle fall, and nothing. I don't hear anything. Pump it up again, let the needle fall, hits 80, hits 70, it hits 60, it hits 50, and the needle pumps. I'm like, something is really wrong with my wife. And I literally thought, I can call 911 right now, and I can get 2034 here in a heartbeat with no ALS equipment. And I know I don't have an ambulance in my town. I'm going to take my wife to the emergency room myself. And so I threw her in my car. My 4-year-old's holding my wife's airway open as we fly into Lodi Memorial Hospital. I pick her up. I carry her into the ER, thinking that they're going to recognize me. They don't recognize me. I put her on a gurney, and start an IV on her, put her on oxygen. I'm literally at her head holding a laryngoscope blade and an ET tube, getting ready to intubate my wife because I've seen ER docs chip teeth, and I'm like, no one's going to chip my wife's teeth, and I'm in work mode. And first doc comes in and says, "Your wife's had a heart attack." Another doc comes in and says, "Your wife's had a stroke." And I keep telling them, I know she's pregnant. And they do an ultrasound of her belly, and ends up being an ectopic pregnancy where her iliac or artery had tore from her femoral artery. And we rush her to surgery. She gets 9 units of blood and she lives. And you know, when you lose your wife, it's a traumatic event, especially when you're raising kids.
Right.
And you know, she's my lifelong friend. We've been married forever, high school sweethearts, and it was a gut punch. And then after you live through that, I started thinking to myself, you know, I have neighbors and friends in Lodi, and I did what I did because I knew the system, and I knew my wife was big sick. She had a real problem that we had to fix right now. And she would have died if I would have waited. And I think to myself, how many people in Lodi, they end up not making it because they didn't get the critical care when they did. And so looking at the opportunity to take Lodi from basic life support to advanced life support at the end of my career really motivated me to fix a big problem. And I hated leaving Stockton. I love those guys. That's an amazing fire department. But come to find out, so is Lodi. Lodi's firefighters go through Stockton's Fire
I
Academy.
was going to say that. I was going to ask you that, but go ahead.
They are incredible. And I find, you know, what Stockton does with their 12, now 13 engines, Lodi does with 4. Never seen people work so hard at a structure fire than when I first saw Lodi firefighters operating on scene. It's impressive. They have a love for the community, they have a passion for firefighting. You know, because we're not as busy, we have more time to train and focus on other things as well. And so, you know, the question being, you know, what made you or how do you know when you needed to promote? Honestly, it happened organically. Like an opportunity presented itself. I'd evaluate it. You know, what's the impacts on my family? What's the impacts on my friends and being in a fire department? I didn't ever care to be a chief. That wasn't a goal of mine. If you would have asked me in my 20s, I want to be a paramedic engine captain and I want to go to fires all day long. I want to save people and help as many situations as possible. I hope to run the wheels off a fire engine and have a crew that is just happy to come to work, that is excited about the esprit de corps and the firehouse culture. And you know, it's eye-opening the first time you promote to a chief officer and you're either in the BC car or in your staff car and you're acting as if you're on the fire engine and there's nobody there laughing at your jokes anymore because you're the only one there. But I find myself, I spent a lot of time in the firehouse and that's how I bridged the gap. But, you know, what I didn't want to have happen is, let's be honest, you know, you see people as they progress through their career, those last, you know, 5, sometimes more years, they coast. And I never wanted to coast. I think coasting's dangerous. I think when you lose your edge, it's dangerous because, you know, here in Lodi, we just had a fourth alarm fire just two weeks ago. We had a pallet yard going like a bomb, and we're forced to engage and try to save warehouses during that time. You never know when you're going to have to be on your razor's edge. It could be your first day. It could be your last day. And the second you've lost your passion for being on top of it, I think it's time to, you know, hang them up. You know, give the job to a young man. So that's a
That's
long answer, but
facts. No, that's facts, and I love the story behind it. I love it. With that being said, is Lodi a transport department as well?
so we are a non-transport fire department.
Non-transport. Okay.
We have, you know, we just received our advanced life support certificate. We received an AFG grant to send 10 of our people through paramedic school. We had to send them in waves because, you know, we couldn't have that many people missing, you know, in order to do our daily operations. But we're back end up getting those people finished. In fact, one of our first accredited paramedics, his name is Ryan Wentz. He'll be, you know, ready to go. And so we're looking at turning it on probably around March of this upcoming year and providing that service. It's been a huge undertaking, one of the more difficult things I've done in my career. Part of it because, you know, something I learned going from Stockton to Lodi, you know, we're so close, neighboring departments, and we look so similar. I didn't necessarily feel like I was an outside chief because I live in Lodi. I've been part of their promotional exams. It was the training chief for most of their firefighters. But there still is nuances to every culture. And taking the time for all of my members to get to know me personally was maybe something I didn't necessarily see in the very beginning as being a need, but became very clear that, yeah, you have to take time and explain the why sometimes over and over again, so people are comfortable. And going from BLS to ALS was a huge shift in culture here. But honestly, for our youngest generation of firefighters, I really wanted it for them. I've helped a lot of people with fires. I've helped a lot of people with vehicle accidents and extrication. But man, I have helped maybe 100-fold people as a paramedic. And, I've had times in my career where, we've made the grab, we've brought the victims outside. I've had people stripping me of my turnouts and SCBA and helmet so I could be the medic to take this person to the hospital and watch this person live. There ain't nothing better than that. I've had moms give me their infants and worked them up on kitchen tables and watched a blue baby become pink again. There's nothing better than that. I've had some great stretches and I've fought some pretty cool fires, but I can't say that was better than saving somebody's life. And so you're probably picking up on this with me. I don't like to have to hand my responsibility off to somebody else. I want to be the guy. And if somebody hands me a problem, I want to have the solution. And I think, in your career, we have some really bad days. And your hope is that your great days outweigh your bad days. Mm-hmm. You've won more than you've lost. Well, EMS gives you a ton of sets and reps. And you look at the people that you've helped, man, isn't that the mission? We say it's life, property, and the environment, or sometimes environment and property, depending
right.
on.
Right.
It's always life, right? If I have a ripping structure fire, but I've got somebody, that we've just saved and they need immediate attention, we're going to put resources to that person right now because it's about life, So I think that, coming to Lodi, that first initial, Ken's going to bring the ALS program was a little bit of a fear factor, but, the union's been very supportive and, their members have been very supportive and volunteering to go. I think 10 years from now, looking back, they're going to say, why didn't we do this a long time ago? This is, if you're talking about you, we as firefighters in especially a town like Lodi, that's very, small town feel, like everybody knows everybody. When we want to provide us the highest level of service that we can, well, we have to evolve as time evolves. We have to, if I look back on my fire service career, the old days of just going to fires, they're gone.
Right.
You see the fire departments added discipline after discipline after discipline. And, I think it really started with after the Vietnam War, and that field medic concept was really pushed forward, that fire departments around the United States said, yeah, that we need to bring that here, that field medicine here. And then you saw us evolve into hazardous materials. And then you have the big earthquakes in Southern California, and it becomes urban search and rescue, and heavy rescue is the big thing. And then, 9/11 happens. September 11th changed the world. And, weapons of mass destruction and terrorism, both domestic and foreign terrorism, became something that the fire department goes to. And, then it's active shooter and TEMS medics and, all these other disciplines that get added to the fire department because of geography. You have water near your town, well, you have a water rescue team. You have high angle, you're in a mountain community, well, you have more of that mountain rescue. Wildland urban interface becomes more of the fire department's response. And as a chief, I like to tell elected officials is that, if you want to know what the fire department does, watch the news tonight and watch the first 10 stories. And probably in every story, in some aspect of every shot, there is a fire engine. Another thing that I brought, Lodi, was an active shooter policy. Nobody wants one. Nobody wants to go to one. But when you hear Columbine or you hear these schools that have active shooters, you never really knew about it, that town before, and they just happen. And Stockton had the Cleveland school shooting, one of the first active shooters, back in the late 80s. And I always watched that as, what happened on that incident was a shooter shooting on a field, mowing down elementary age kids. And it was Engine 9 Stockton firefighters crawling across the field with no protection, dragging kids off that field to get them to safety or to get them to, emergency medical care. And I always thought, why will we not want to just own the fact that it could happen? And if it does happen, let's at least have a plan and let's have protective equipment so that our people at least have some protection. Because what I do know about firefighters is if something's going down, they're going to get right in the middle of it and they're going to try to fix it, even if they weren't trained. At this last pile yard fire, what we had, I had Lodi firefighters on forklifts trying to move piles around or to create separations because that's what needed to happen. They just did it. That's what firefighters do. And so, here in Lodi, we brought an active shooter, ballistic vest and helmets, got a partnership with the PD and created a plan. The fire department goes to everything. And, we need to be prepared and planned for whatever the city might or the citizens might call us to do.
Definitely, Chief. Definitely. For those that don't know, including myself, I think you mentioned Lodi has four engines and a truck. So are you guys running at a four stations, five?
We have four stations. Our downtown station is a dual staffed, a truck and an engine. We run a traditional truck company here, with split duties. We have a lot of, vertical ventilation search. We have subscribed, in this county for the most part, between the city of Tracy, which is called South County Fire Authority, and city of Stockton, the city of Lodi, to this kind of order of operations for fire ground operations, where you kind of know what you're going to do based upon when you arrive and what seat you're sitting in. And so the first arriving fire engine obviously is going to attack the fire, any immediate rescue, forcible entry issue, and most likely operate off their tank water to get, fast water to the fire. The second arriving engine is going to support the first due engine, either it be a water supply, getting the first line into service, getting a backup line there, or any immediate exposure. The third arriving engine is really going to think about search initially. And the reason why we have the third engine think about search is because we want our truck company to address immediate ventilation as possible. If it isn't needed, duties as assigned could fall into play. But, we believe in that coordinated attack where fast water to the fire, get some type of ventilation, hopefully vertical ventilation to create that lift, get a fan at the door. And man, fires go out real quick when it's coordinated like that.
Right.
If any of those steps come out of whack, it really quick because things go bad. And so, here in Lodi, primarily residential, we do have downtown some industry as well. But our view is we want to get to it quick because we want to get it while it's small. Because if it continues to grow, our reflex is mutual aid. And we have automatic aid agreements with our surrounding fire districts and with Stockton Fire Department and Cosumnes Fire Department to our north. So like, for example, that pallet yard fire we just had, we brought 17 engines and three trucks to that just to get that thing out as quickly as we could. That's kind of how we're laid out. The four engines, shag most of the EMS calls throughout the day. Primarily first out for, grass fires, all that thing of that nature. And the truck is assigned more of your rescues, your auto extrications, and structure fires.
Okay. And your minimum staffing on the engines and ladders?
Three O on both. Yep,
Three on
15
both.
people on duty every day.
Okay. All right. And you just said that you did say earlier that 10 of your 10 of your personnel are either wrapping up or attending paramedic school.
Correct, correct.
Okay. All right.
Our
So you're
goal,
transitioning to that.
right? Our goal is a paramedic on every engine company, and so that would be a minimum of four on duty every day. But we wouldn't want to cap that. When you're on scene of MCI, you never have enough, and
Right.
so well, they're gonna. I think through a natural progression, we're gonna see more and more want to go. They got a pretty good incentive as far as a pay incentive to be a paramedic, and that helps out too. California's expensive, and it's another way to get, our junior guys a little bit of a pay bump, maybe help out at home as well.
Right. Well, what I like on your take is because, the fire service right now, you have a lot of individuals and a lot of fire departments that if they do transport, it's a turnoff for people that are looking to either get into the service or maybe laterally transfer to that department. And granted, you don't do transport, but I love your vision on it because you had essentially a near miss very close to your heart, and it sparked that notion of, this community, if we need an ALS unit, it could be 10, 20 minutes out. And us firefighters and EMS know time is of the essence. So I don't know very many chiefs that are going to go, this is what I'm willing to do. This is what I want to push it out. So when you decided to do that, how did your membership react when you're like, hey, this is what I want to do?
I think it was kind of split, if I was honest with you. You know, early on, before I even came to Lodi, before I told a soul that I was testing for another agency, I met with the union here in Lodi and basically said, this is who I am. This is what I would want to do if I was here. If I'm not a good fit, let me know because I'm perfectly content finishing out my career in Stockton. And you know, the union e-board at that time, man, we hit it off. They had the same vision, and they you know, some of these changes that we were looking to make in the organization, they've been trying to make for the past 15 years. And for a lot of circumstances, it just didn't happen. And you know, I thought, well, shoot, we could do this together. The problem about that was, you know, we have 51 people in this organization, and not everybody has FaceTime with me or knew me to that level. And you know, it took a lot of, you know, obviously I don't like to go slow, and I had to learn, Ken, you sometimes have to pump the brakes, and you gotta sit at the coffee table, and you gotta have the conversation because, you know, you have I'm the new guy. I'm entering into an organization where these people are fully vested. This is their fire department, and I'm breaking into it. And you know, we had we the first thing I you know I tried to implement, or we implemented, was an ALS committee. And this was while we were BLS, we created an ALS committee with primarily EMTs, and said, let's write a plan. Let's write a plan on how we can get this thing forward. And we ended up drafting about a 50-page document of this whole ALS transition plan. And I wanted something that they could hold. Like, here's you know, if you have to explain it to somebody, here's the real playbook. That's not going to change from time to time. It might have to massage a little bit, but this is the playbook. But then, more than anything, I wanted their input into the document. Like, you guys tell me what how this would work best. Now, like in everything, you know, you can kill programs by putting them in committee, and there has to be the guy in the back of the bus who's pushing the bus, and that was probably me most of the time. But what really got this thing engaged was my budget analyst, Michelle Munoz, had helped me with an assistance to firefighter grant for sending people to paramedic school, and we asked for $1 million, and I thought, there's no way we're getting this. And you know, we had written one in Stockton years ago, and were awarded it based upon a lot of socioeconomics. And Lodi is not a poor community. Lodi is a nice community. And so we couldn't use that same argument, but we flipped it and said, well, the argument is Lodi needs paramedics more than Stockton because Stockton takes all of our ambulances. And so we're waiting. We should have qualified paramedics here. And you know, the AFG folks were great. They not only believed us, they gave us the $1 million. And so it really opened the door to make it easier for my people to go to school. You know, we gave them the time off. We paid them overtime to go to school.
Awesome.
We paid for school. We gave them the car to get. They went to Sac State. We went to Sac State University as an accredited, you know, university. So now they're even earning college credits while they're there. You know, honestly, if you're looking at your career and you had more than 10 years left, you'd be silly not to look at this thing because you're talking about a good pay incentive on the back end. You get paid for free training, and you're going to have more of a discipline when you arrive on emergency scenes. It's a win all the way around. And so I think as it kind of played out and you started seeing people see the benefit, then you started seeing more and more support. What also really helped is our city council is very supportive of public safety, and they're very supportive of increasing the level of service to paramedic. And so you combine all those things together, I think that's what really got that into the end zone. I will tell you this though, I worked for Stockton Fire when they transported. And you know, I will be the first to admit, I didn't want to do a 30-year career on an ambulance. That was not my jam. I will tell you that as a company officer, I loved having the transport work for my organization. Because I could hold those folks accountable to our standards. I could hold them accountable to our level of commitment to the community. I feel like they took a lot of pride in the department. And I do think that it's probably best fitted for a single role concept. You know, people who choose that, like, this is their career path. They want to work on the ambulance, and this is great for them. Awesome. But I'd also tell, I would say the firefighter medics, I wouldn't want to give up the opportunity to work on one, because if I could rotate through and say, you know what, I want to do 6 months, I want to do a year on a busy, you know, medic unit and get my skills back up and get my rapport back with the, you know, emergency room staff, and you know, maybe get something different. You know, the box is a totally different animal than the engine. I wouldn't ever want to carve myself out from having the opportunity to, you know. And there's also some fire departments that, you know, that I'm the president of the EMS section for Cal Chiefs, or the past president, I should say. I just handed it over. And I've been in organizations where in their culture, they really value the ambulance as well. And they rotate through. You know, there's a shift on the ambulance and, you know, two shifts on the engine or whatever it might be. And so I hear it all the time that, you know, from firefighters about just, you know, not wanting to work on the ambulance. And I get it. I totally get it. But, you know, we're going on those calls anyway. And I would rather have in my organization, you know, knowing how long is it going to take for them to get there, what's the equipment going to look like that shows up, how professional are these people going to be. I'd rather have it in my department than outside of my department. But it is a hot topic for sure.
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely. Awesome. Okay. With that being said, Chief, your personal opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
So this is a near and dear to my heart. I think when you come into the fire service and you raise your right hand and you swear an oath to protect the public, to protect property, to protect the economy of your town by keeping businesses running, it's going to involve risk. And, you know, because of that, we train every day, we buy the best equipment we possibly can, we use it and we trust it. You know, there are times where you really have to hang it out there to meet the core mission of this job. You know, being a Marine in the Marine Corps isn't always safe. Being a police officer isn't always safe. Being a firefighter isn't always safe. And, you know, the underside of my helmet says firefighting is inherently dangerous to your life. You know, we take on these risks to have great gains. And I've heard the term aggressive used in a negative tone. And I think people who use aggressive negatively are using it in the same way you'd use the word reckless. When we operate aggressively, we're not operating recklessly. We understand the risk. I've had friends die in the line of duty, and that is something that weighs very heavy on me when we're talking about, you know, a friend of yours going through the ultimate sacrifice for a fire, right? But because I honor those men so much, we're going to stay true to the craft, and we're going to get after it as often as we can. We are the only ones who go when there's a fire. That is our jam. And, you know, if it was your family that was in peril, what would you expect? What would you demand? And if that's what you demand for them, then you need to be that for everyone else. I don't care who you're responding to, where you're responding. That's something that I loved about Stockton is people receive some of the highest level of services, regardless of socioeconomics. You saw some of the poorest of poor or the richest of riches get the exact same service. Where does that happen on earth? You know,
Exactly.
coming to Lodi, I was so pleased to see it's the same thing here. Like, there's this love of humanity and this respect and passion for the job that, you know, we will do whatever it takes to fix your situation up until the point of really hanging it out there. And, you know, I want my guys to go home better after every single shift. You know, even better than they came is the concept, but I can't promise that. You know, I've in my own personal life, I fell through a floor and ruptured three discs in my back and separated my shoulder. But we also on that fire rescued seven little kids in an apartment fire. It's an even trade for me. A year to the day, it was Valentine's Day. A year to the day later, we're going after three other kids in a Victorian fire, and I had the roof collapse on me. I ended up breaking a couple of ribs. It's not safe. But, you know, I don't know. I think when you look at making your career path the path of a fireman, you have to do a lot of self-introflection and say, do I have courage? Do I have courage to do the things that are hard when they matter? And if you look about what we do, it's not that hard. It's stretching hose lines, throwing ladders, you know, breaking things. That's not that hard. Half of it is fun. What makes it hard is the stress of the emergency scene. People screaming, your buddies in peril, you know, having to act and get it right the first time efficiently and quickly. That's what makes this job hard. And so when I say, when I hear the word aggressive, in my head, I'm thinking this, I have two people trapped in a bedroom. We got to get after it right now. Otherwise they die. I have a firefighter down somewhere in this building. We got to go protect them where they are while we get them extricated or they die. When I hear the term aggressive, it means I'm acting in this way so that something bad doesn't really happen. I'm trying to prevent the thing that's going to, you know, just be terrible. And, you know, for some departments, aggressive might be a little more than other departments based upon training, experience, bandwidth. That's okay. You know, what we're asking is that every firefighter, you know, commit themselves to this job, train as fervently as you possibly can, and when called upon, go do great things and do them greatly. That's what aggressive means to me, you know, and when you can't be that, then hand it off to the next guy and let that guy step up and fill the gap. Because, you know, like here in Lodi, I have 15 on-duty firefighters to address whatever Lodi needs today. And, you know, they need to be highly trained, highly efficient, and ready to go at a moment's notice. And if we aren't that, we have failed our mission. And so, you know, some fire chiefs, they, you know, that risk averse, you know, we don't want to have something bad happen today. And I can appreciate, you know, not wanting to get people hurt.
Right.
But, you know, when you're the general and you send your soldiers in the battle, you know, sometimes things happen and you have to deal with, you know, how to fix it after that. So,
well said. Well said. Was it hard to get the buy-in when you came into Lodi as the commander in charge because of your background from what you've learned from Stockton? Because, you know, certain individuals might be set in their ways, and you know, you might have an individual on your department that was like, I don't, that's what Stockton does, that's not what we do. But when you have a chief that's been around that 100% all in type mentality, was it hard to get the buy-in from your members?
I don't know if I'd use the same that I if I'd use the word hard, I would say it took time, and it took time more so that they could trust me. You know, I think whenever you have change in an organization, you have, you know, folks who can be concerned as to where are we going, and you know, we're going too fast or we're going too slow or, you know, whatever it is. I think more than anything, it took me, you know, maybe changing some of the ways I approach things because I needed to better understand kind of how they ticked. And, you know, that was a learning curve for me. I have great, great firefighters here, very talented. And there are some things here, some people here who are the subject matter expert in their own realm. I've got a couple fire captains who are in the wildland firefighting industry. We work under the Office of Emergency Services, and going on strike teams is real part of the culture here in Lodi. These two guys are incredible. They manage, you know, major emergencies in the Sierra Nevada that are just, you know, their experience is tenfold of what I have. And being able to like partner with professionals like that only strengthen the department. And I do like to say I have one superpower, like one talent that I think God gave me. And it's when I meet people and I get to know them, I can immediately see their talents. And when I see their talents, I can see how if I put these two people together, I put these crews together, they'll really work well together, or they'll do great things. I did it in the division of training. I did it in the communication center, and you know, being a basketball coach for years, you see the talent of young athletes, and you say, if I put you as a forward and you as a center and you as a two guard and you as a shooting or a point guard, we'll win games. When coming to Lodi, I saw the talent that was here, and it actually made you excited. Of man, we could get so much stuff done. They just needed a chief to say, I don't care if I make all the decisions. You know, I'm trying to hand decisions down as low as possible. You guys make these decisions. and where we want to go. We or my job is just to coordinate all of it. It's kind of like, you're the conductor of an orchestra. You got to get all the music tuned first, all the instruments tuned first, and then you just lead the music and let the musicians out there, the firefighters out there, be actually what the work is being done. And so I would say it just took, in some degrees, it was hard as far as, very intentionally and purposed conversations and trying to read the room. But more than anything, it took time to just get to know each other.
Okay. One of the topics that you said was near and dear to your heart is my version of this question that you wanted to hit on: wellness and truly being there for one another in need. What does that mean to you?
In my career, I've had friends die in the line of duty. I've had, unfortunately, friends take their lives. And I don't know if I totally get it. I respect it. PTSD is a real thing. I come from a pretty good family support network. I've got a great church I attend. My faith is very important to me. I have people I can go to talk to and have hard conversations when you have those calls that you just don't like, right? We all have had them. And you're the one who just pulled that ticket and you had to deal with that situation. And I think for me, it was easier to kind of let that baggage down as they came on the conveyor belt and deal with them. But I have friends who had a hard time. And I think that as fire service leaders, I'm talking about myself in particular, I haven't done enough. I haven't done enough to, create a safety net under first responders that will catch all of them. I don't want anybody to fall through the cracks. I think some of our access to mental health and just care, we get pushed through processes that don't necessarily fit our mold. You go talk to a psychiatrist or a psychologist and they're trying to fix your problems and you're like, no, I fix problems, you don't fix my problems, and that doesn't necessarily land well. And so, something we've done here in Lodi is, obviously a peer support team is very important. I personally think it's a great entry level to getting help, but oftentimes the people who gravitate towards being peer support personnel are also hurting themselves. They also have their own traumas. Now they're carrying the traumas of their friends and their traumas. And like, how is this going to get better? And you see a lot of alcoholism and other just dependencies to cope through those times. And so, we wanted to have, better access to some type of support care, but obviously, people don't want to go through the work comp process for some mental health issue, and they hide it. And so we've contracted with a company called First Alarm Wellness, which our clinician Tina, she has 24/7, 7 days a week, a hotline that you can call, and she will help get you or navigate you through your issues, whether it be, just Zoom sessions or in-person sessions, or even going to taking away to retreats, and working through your issues. My folks have access to that for free without my knowledge. They can make these contacts and get the help they need. My only ask with First Alarm Wellness is just let me know how we're being used. Like, I don't need to know who or why. I just want to know what's the volume. Like, do I have a major problem happening here, and do I need to do more? We also brought in a chaplaincy program. So we have, chaplains on emergency scenes, chaplains in the firehouse to be able to have those conversations. And, I know not everybody connects to some faith-based community, but I know it was really important to me and it's been very helpful to me, and to have one more access point for my folks. And don't make fun of me, but I contracted with this company called First Jeopardy, where they do first responder yoga. And it's something you could log into, zoom into. 30 years ago, I would have never thought that this would be a thing, but man, it's an opportunity for firefighters to, when they're recovering from work comp injuries, to get something in between doctor's appointments to do. There's some mindfulness behind it. Paige Arnon is the owner of the company, and she's got a great program. My goal is to have such a large net underneath my guys that if they slip and are falling, we catch them before they hit the ground. Firefighters are way too valuable. They're too important. They're too hard to make. And in today's, market, finding people who fit the mold is getting harder and harder and harder to do. And you get somebody who's brave enough, who's educated enough, and physically can do the job, and they have no criminal record, they have honesty and integrity. That's a rare breed. And so when they are hurting, we need to help them. And so that's my passion, is to make sure that we as a fire service are getting you all the way through your career and you are able to process at the end of it.
Definitely. Okay. I always like to ask this question towards the end. And this question, it's not to boast or brag, but most of the time my guests aren't fire chiefs. And so it's always, where would you like to see yourself before you retire? But since you are currently a fire chief, I'm still going to ask, is there anything else you'd like to do before you decide, hey, this is it for me?
There is, and I'm not sure what it is. I have my entire life has been in emergency management, and it's always been on the fire side of things. I could see myself wanting to work potentially with like Homeland Security, doing something more on a national standard. I don't ever think I want to completely disconnect from the fire service. I think I'll always stay engaged in the training element. I mean, I still help out with the Stockton Regional Fire Academy. I love the RIC operations. I like firefighter survival. I love Ladder Day. Ladder Day is one of my jams. And then too, at some point, like personally, I want to be a great like a grandpa someday and be able to coach my grandkids and
Okay.
tell the stories on the front porch. But I think right now my focus is, finish out my time here in Lodi and then maybe focus on something national.
Okay. And you sparked the notion, and I always kind of like to ask, especially when it comes to fire chief, are you in favor for outside training?
Oh, 100%. 100%. My time in the division of training in Stockton, and we were rebuilding the training manual and expectations. We went to some awesome cities like Sacramento and LA City, Glendale, Burbank, Pasadena, San Diego, Fresno, Bakersfield, to include Chicago, New York City, Seattle. There's some great fire departments out there that you can take these nuggets from. Like we said earlier on, there are subject matter experts everywhere. And I want to take their knowledge and bring them to our organization and then implement those and then brand them as our own, because that's what we do in the fire service. We share all day long.
If you do have a member that wants to go outside, outside of their four walls to learn something new or to get better, what are the like incentives that you do? Because sometimes, especially in this day and age, I firmly believe that it's not always on the department to fund that. You know what I mean? Like to me, the individual that wants to go out there has to have a little skin in the game as well. But do you provide some sort of incentive for your members?
So we in California, under the State Fire Marshal's Training Division, we can submit training hours and receive what we call CALJAC funds back. And so the state actually helps us pay for some of the training that we provide our people. We just sent one of our captains back to, I believe, Houston, Texas, for a mid-rise high-rise class just a couple weeks ago. And my expectation of them is, if I'm going to send you take good notes and come back here and bring the class back to us. And that's exactly what takes place. We have the Fresno Fire Symposium that happens every year. We send people down to either help instruct or to take courses. We also, through California fire chiefs and California professional firefighters put on trainings all the time on different areas of, whether it be FBO, Firefighter Bill of Rights, or other things. We try to get our people out so that we stay relevant to industry standard. If all you do is look in, you might miss the ship that just went by. And we as a fire service, we've done a good job at maneuvering our way to what the community's needs are. I mean, active shooter is probably the most recent one. You've seen the most, growth in the fire department.
All right.
It is this absolutely essential to get outside your four walls. Not discrediting, you might have subject matter experts in your own department, and I think I've heard you say, you can't be a prophet in your own land.
Yes.
I think that, we as a firefighters, I would say, we need to really be honest with ourselves and give people respect where respect is due.
That's what I'm saying. Thank
Absolutely.
you. Thank you.
I have a guy in Stockton. His name is Javier Ricci. He is absolute guru with ladders. Absolutely. I'm going to give him all the praise for that because he has mastered that skill. Or, I can give you examples all over the place of people who in my own land who do great work, and we just need to be humble and allow them to have the spotlight for a minute because that's their
Exactly.
jam.
And I and that we can that's a whole nother subject. I don't want to go down it, but I'm just glad that somebody else said it. Like, especially if that person is humble enough where they're not bragging, they've taken the time to get good at a skill and they are really good at it. To me, it's what I call give them their flowers. They're not going out there going, "Hey, look at me, look at me." It's look at what this guy's done because he's done it because he's taken the time to train. And continue to train and continue to train.
If I was honest with you, I know I've been called arrogant, and I'm not arrogant. I love people. I'm about as humble as you can get. But when you put me in certain positions or certain emergencies, I'm confident. I'm very confident. I know what to do in this situation, and that can translate in some people's worlds as, boy, he's bigger than life. Well, no, I'm not. I'm trying to handle this thing right now, and if you were to look at me 10 minutes after this event, I'm back to being regular old Ken. And, I think that my time spent in the fire service, especially early on, I've learned, everybody has a role to do and everybody has a place. And sometimes you might be in the spotlight and it's your job to get this done. You're teaching, you're instructing, you're sharing information. The times I've seen classes like buy in, boy, man, growth happens really quick. And you got to be careful when you stonewall someone, they might just not share with you the knowledge base they have, and who's the loser there? You are, right? For not allowing that person to have that spotlight. So, yeah.
Definitely. Okay. Love it. Love it. Chief, I have to say thank you for accepting that DM message that I sent you. You're probably like, who is this person? Is this some Facebook spam? But you accepted it. I've been looking forward to talking to you. I truly appreciate the fact that you came on and you spoke the gospel. And what I like about having this conversation is it shows that yes, you are a fire chief, you're a chief officer, but you're still a firefighter at heart. And I believe we are truly missing that in the fire service due to maybe promoting the wrong individuals or the individuals that have just forgot what it was like coming up through the ranks. So continue to be who you are and doing the great things that you're doing, sir.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on this show for sure.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You have a good day.
You too.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.